No combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Insight Teen Hour. You're listening to KHTS 98.1 FM. And my name is Frederick. I'm from Insight Treatment Programs here in Santa Clarita, a local intensive outpatient program for teenagers that are struggling with mental health issues or drug and alcohol issues. And today, well, last week on the show, we had Dr. Regine coming in, and she had a guest in the studio, and they were talking about relationships. That was Dr. Ish. They were talking about relationships in general, how to improve your relationships as adults and parents. Today, we are going to address how you can improve your relationship with your teen. We're going to talk about, you know, what can be sort of hard for the relationship, what would have a negative impact on the relationship with your teen. How can you communicate better? How can you build up trust? Because obviously, when teens are struggling, their relationship with parents and their relationships in the families or the family dynamics are extremely important. So today in the studio, I have invited Melina Alley. She's a LCSW from our community, and she has a lot of experience in working with adolescents and young adults and parents in her private practice. So welcome to the studio, Melina. Thanks for coming in.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Great. It's going to be interesting to hear all the important things you have to say about this. But obviously, in an intensive outpatient program like ours, we spent quite a bit of time, you know, having to guide parents on reconnecting and building up their relationships with their teens again. So this topic is something that's, you know, obviously very important to us as well. But I'm of course very curious to hear your input and hear your perspective on some of these things and how you work with your families in your private practice about this. But Melina, before we go into all that, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, the experience you have and why you're so passionate about this field?
Well, it's kind of a funny story because I went to college originally to be a kindergarten teacher, and somehow I've ended up working with teens and adolescents. but I thought I always wanted to be a teacher and work specifically with younger kids, and I went to college and got my teaching certificate. I was certified K-8 with an art endorsement so I could be like an art teacher, and over time, the more I worked with kids and in the classroom, I just started enjoying working with older kids. And I remember the first sixth grade classroom I worked in, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm in over my head. I can't handle this. They're passing notes. They all have crushes. The class was taking a field trip to the pool, and they were all really concerned about, you know, their bodies and how they would look in their swimsuits. And I was just like, I can't do this. I need the kindergarten or the third grade. But the more I worked in the classroom, I actually started to really enjoy it. And, you know, I was almost done with my teaching program, but I found myself gravitating much more to the social and emotional needs of the students. You know, they were dealing with body image. We had a student who was homeless, some racism in the classroom, just all these kind of social and emotional struggles that I found the teacher, in a lot of the classrooms I worked in, the teachers either didn't know how to address, didn't have the skills, they weren't learning that in their teaching programs, and this was 20 years ago when I was a pre-service teacher, or they just felt uncomfortable, you know, addressing those situations. They thought, like, I'm the teacher, we just stick to the academics. But I was much more interested in that. And so a friend actually suggested that I look into social work, and I had no idea what that was, but I looked into it, and I thought, yeah, this is exactly what I'm interested in. And so I went straight to grad school and got my master's in school social work, specifically. Mm-hmm. So I did that in Chicago and worked in a junior high in Cicero, which is home of Al Capone, like today mostly Mexican and Puerto Rican neighborhood, but it's a school of 3,000 students, and there were six of us social workers, like six school counselors. And so I was pretty busy, and I worked there for 8 years. So it was a lot of crises, and, you know, besides servicing students with IEPs and kind of doing their counseling minutes, also just dealing with a lot of child abuse, students involved in gangs, suicidal ideation, you know, going with a student to the hospital, just a lot of crises and trauma overall. And even when I was placed in that school, I still wasn't sure about the age and thought, and again, like in over my head, I don't know about this age, but I loved it. And I stayed there for 8 years before I moved to LA. And once I moved to LA, I had to transfer my clinical license. So I first worked in a group practice while I was working to transfer that. So I actually worked in Santa Clarita. I was working at Dynamic Interventions. They're a vendor for the regional center. So I was doing probably like 15 social skills groups a week for students with autism. So I did that for a couple years and then started my private practice in 2016. So my practice is based in Encino, and I just work with adolescents now. So the kind of junior high school, college age, and the emerging adults, we say, you know, someone who's graduated from college but still maybe living at home or looking for their first job. So that's really my area and my passion now.
It's a great age. I mean, obviously, we only deal with teenagers as well, right, Melina? So I think it's a wonderful population to work with, simply because you have to be authentic and real, and you have to really be into it, right? Because the teens, they will sniff it if you're not. If you just consider it as a job and you're just going to go there and do your hours, then they won't open up. Then they won't let you in, right? They're going to test you all the time. And only the ones that really has passion for this, I think are able to stay in the industry and continue to do work. So otherwise, they won't open up to you. But great to hear how much experience you have. You know how many years you've been working with them. And I know in your private practice, you are doing some group work as well. You have some groups for teenagers and. Was it teenagers and young adults, or?
Yeah, I've had young adult groups in the past. Right now, I just focus on the teens, junior high and high school. I really came into social work doing group work because, as you can imagine, in the schools, there's not a lot of time to see students individually, and so most of my experience has been running groups. And in the school setting, it was a variety of groups, from bibliotherapy groups to trauma groups, anger management, social skills. In my private practice over the years, I've run a junior high social skills group and a teen coping skills group. So those have been the kind of two consistent groups. And also did a art coping skills group for junior high students as well.
And you do that every week? Is that weekly groups you're running? And
yes, I don't have any running right now. I'll be starting some soon. But yes, they run weekly. I run them for 8 weeks at a time. So they are closed groups, you know, versus your center, they're probably open and teams kind of coming in and out all the time. I have just a closed group. So 8 weeks, and they start to really get to know each other and build that trust. And then at the end of the 8 weeks, we close, and some of them continue and want to do another group. But that would be the time that I would open it up and kind of start over with a new group.
Yeah. Our groups are, you know, obviously they're open in the sense that if a new kid admits to the intensive outpatient program, then they're welcome to come in the group. But teen can just show up because we think it's very important to build a community, right, and for teens to feel safe and get to know each other. So I know you haven't visited our facility, but it's this warehouse space where there's, you know, basketball hoop and a climbing wall or things like that to help the kids feel, get to know each other and create community. Because I think, and I'm sure you have the same thing, but groups are amazing, right? If you have a group where the kids can really support each other and where they feel safe, then there's a lot of very interesting work that can be done in a group setting versus the individual sessions with just the therapist.
Yeah. I agree. I love it.
It is. It's different, right? It's challenging sometimes when you have a good group of teenagers sitting there challenging you left and right. But obviously it can be very rewarding when the kids can really support each other and call each other out on some of their stuff sometimes or hold each other accountable, right? That's when it becomes really powerful. On that note, maybe I should say that there's a website called teensforteenshelp.org. which one of the parents from our treatment program has actually set up, where they give teens an opportunity to hear other teens talk about their mental health journey and their history. It's a wonderful website that I can recommend everybody to go to if you want to hear teenagers express some of their journeys. Good, Milena. I mean, before we sort of start digging into how behaviors or parents' behaviors could have a real negative impact on the relationships. I know that in your private practice, you're working a lot, of course, with teens and young adults, and it's primarily teens that are struggling with mental health or has primary mental health diagnosis. So you're seeing a lot of teens that are struggling with anxiety and depression. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Just general anxiety and feeling anxious all the time. I also have a lot of clients with social anxiety. They feel really anxious in social situations, constantly worry that people are judging them, worrying about how to speak up or what to say, what to wear. So something as simple as making a phone call to ask a business for their hours can be really anxiety provoking for them. And then I work with a lot of teens with depression, some self-harming behaviors, suicidal ideation. Going through a really hard time in their life.
Mm-hmm. Good. So tell me, or maybe you could talk a bit about why it's so important to really focus on the whole family dynamic and sort of parents' ability to build up trust and ensure a good relationship with the teens when they're struggling with some mental health issues. I mean, it might be obvious to some, but for others, you know, why do I need to have a good relationship with my teen? He or she doesn't want to talk to me anyway. You know, just us isolating in their room. They don't want to go out. When I ask them how they're doing in school, they just look upset at me and say, okay, Mom, or leave me alone, or I don't want to talk about it. So why is it that why do you feel that it's so important that we continue to work on these family dynamics and work on the teens' relationships to their parents?
Yeah, great question. So, yeah, I think you prefaced that really well, that they, a lot of times, especially with the depression, are kind of isolated in their room. They might seem really angry or irritable. They're not wanting to spend a lot of time with the family. And some of that is developmentally normal at this age, right? Their job as an adolescent is to individuate or kind of separate from their family. We don't want them to turn 18 and go off to college or start a job and just all of a sudden be thrown out into the world. So part of their job is to kind of push back against the parents and be like, no, I can drive myself to school, or I'm going to stay away from the family longer and hang out after school with my friends. Peer relationships become much more important at this age because of changes going on in the brain. Things are much more rewarding, but particularly peer rewards. So that attention or approval from peers is going to be much more rewarding and important at this age, because this helps them kind of separate and individuate from their family, so they can get these kind of safe little, while they're still at home and have a parent watching over them, they can have these safe little adventures or outings, like away from the family, and learn how to be an individual in the world and then come back to that safety at night or, you know, checking in with the family. But a lot of times that anxiety or the depression that they're dealing with is, you know, either exacerbated or maybe caused sometimes from stressors going on at home. And it's really important for parents to learn how some of their interactions or behaviors might be affecting their teen. And sometimes they have no idea. They're just kind of, you know, we kind of parent in the way we were parented oftentimes.
This is familiar
and we don't know better. So sometimes that's maybe exacerbating a problem, or some of those behaviors can help to improve, you know, the depression or the anxiety, or help to support the treatment if the teen is in treatment and therapy. So we really want to strengthen that relationship so that they can support the treatment and learn how to support their teen. And ultimately the goal isn't for a teen to be in therapy forever, for anyone to be in therapy forever. We want them to form secure relationships with their friends and their caregivers or families, and be able to rely and go to those natural supports in their life. Not every time they have a struggle that they're going to their therapist or have to check in with their therapist, but eventually to be able to reach out to people, to their friends and family. So we want to strengthen those relationships so they know that their parent is always there for them. And even if their parent might not always agree with their choices, that they will still love them and still be there to support them through those struggles. So, yes, I'm very attachment-based in my work, and I want them to be able to feel safe to go to their parents, and then to help the parents know how to respond, to be able to open that communication and encourage that further.
Yes. I'm sorry, Milena, but unfortunately, time is flying. We have to go into a little break. But when we come back, we can also talk a bit about, as you mentioned, you know, why it is so important for parents maybe to understand their own path, and maybe some of their own trauma or their own attachment issues, so that they can separate that from some of the needs that the teens has. I think often we need to focus on, hey, it can't just be about the teens. Sometimes parents also come into the relationship with some of their own history, right? And why that is important. But you're listening to KHTS 98.1 FM, and this is the Insight Teen Hour. And this is Milena Alley, LCSW, in our local community, who's here to talk about your relationship with your teen and how that can be improved.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back.
So welcome back to the Insight Teen Hour. I'm here in the studio today with Milena Alley, who's an LCSW in our local community and has a private practice. And Milena has specialized in sort of working with teens and young adults in her private practice. And she has groups that she's running. She's very dedicated to running groups with teens. Has a lot of great experience that I think we are grateful for getting in here today. Thank you, Milena, for coming.
Yes, thank you.
So we were talking a little bit about how the kids, even though the parents are doing their absolute best to support them and to build the relationship, they often come to you and they have a perspective of what it is that's going on. You know, they often don't feel hurt or don't feel seen or don't feel believed. But maybe you could shed a bit of light on what you feel that the teens are coming in and telling you about their relationship with their parents.
Yeah. A lot of times the teens I work with don't want to share some of what we're talking about in therapy with their parents for a variety of reasons. But I would like to just touch on, you know, a few of those big reasons that I see repeatedly. And one that I hear over and over is just that their parent will minimize or invalidate how they're feeling. So maybe they think, you know, their parent won't think that their breakup is a big deal, or the friend struggles aren't a big deal. They don't necessarily believe that their teen is depressed. They might have a response like, well, you have everything that you could need or want, or you seem perfectly happy last night when you were with your friends, so they don't really believe that they're struggling with depression. So the teens just don't feel comfortable to share with their parents. You know, if they're not going to believe them or kind of minimize how they're feeling, it doesn't feel like a safe place. And I think sometimes this is, again, as we were saying, the parents parenting how they were parented, maybe a parent that was their parent overly concerned and anxious. So they feel really overwhelmed or anxious if their teen is depressed or cutting or self-harming. Or maybe a parent who is more neglectful or had trouble sharing how they were feeling or that they loved them. And these conversations feel really uncomfortable and foreign to them. So just that minimizing how they're feeling, and sure, sometimes it's hard for us to understand, you know, what a teen or someone else is going through. You know, it feels like we've had all these years of experience. It's okay that you have a fight with a friend. We know that you can work it out and there will be more friends along the way, but this won't be the only breakup you go through. But for the teen experiencing that, it feels big.
Of course. And I also often feel we have to talk to parents about usually parents have experienced some of the same things that the teens are experiencing, right? So if the teen is struggling with social anxiety, often it runs in the family, maybe mom or dad has experienced the same thing. And I think often parents have a tendency to feel that whatever worked for them is also going to work for their teen. Right? We obviously want the best for our teens. And if meditation or healthy food was helping me a lot, then obviously I want to help my teen do it. Or if I work through my trauma just by keep working and, you know, shoving it under the rug and pretending everything is okay, and that worked for me, then obviously I want my teen to have the same experience. That's the message I'm sending to my teen. So what I'm getting at is I think there's often a need for parents to really see or understand that, hey, whatever worked for you might not necessarily work for your teenager, right? Everybody's different and everybody has their own path. And you can easily sort of squash the teen's feeling of being heard if you're constantly pushing your whatever worked for you on them, right?
That's a good point. There's that disconnect sometimes between maybe the parent, like, well, in my family, we just argue and you say your piece and then it's over. And then maybe they have a child who's more sensitive and really overanalyzes and overthinks everything. And they're like, well, my parent said this little thing. And the parent's forgotten even about what they said, but that teen will think about it for hours or days, you know, and really hangs on every word. So maybe, having like a child who's much more sensitive, for example, and really thinks about all of that. Or comparing to siblings too, like, because sometimes, you know, they have one child that they can just, you know, say, do this or here's the advice, and the other one just needs a hug or to be listened to.
Yes, I think that's a good point, right? Often parents come to us and they don't understand, you know, what the heck happened? You know, I got three kids and two of them went this path and this worked for them and, you know, this is where they are now. And then I have one child who's struggling and doesn't, you know, just doesn't take it in the same way. And it can be very frustrating, I think, for parents to understand that, well, you really have to cater and build up your relationship differently with this third person or this third child, right?
Yeah. I think another thing I see a lot, too, is parents expressing their opinion a lot of times that comes off as judgment. And it might seem so innocent or, you know, fine, just like, I don't like that outfit, or why did you cut your hair like that? I don't like this friend. I don't like this person you're dating. You should break up with them. How come you didn't get a better grade on that test? A lot of times these little comments said in passing, they might not think of it as a big deal, but the teen is really thinking about that a lot, you know, a lot later in the day. But their parent doesn't approve of of them or their choices. And while it seems like their teen doesn't care, really they do. They are talking about it in therapy. You know, those, mm-hmm. those comments of disapproval. Because ultimately we all want to fit in and feel safe with our people. And hopefully that would be your parents or your caregivers, those people in your family. So if you feel like you don't fit in and you're not accepted, then that's a really scary thing.
Yes, that's very true. A lot of parents come to us at least and say, yeah, you know, I don't understand. You know, my teenager is just so defiant. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to do the right thing. You know, he never participates. He just wants to upset me. He just wants to hurt me. And I think often the conversation is, no, there's nothing the kids would rather do than being good kids, but their low self-esteem or their fear or their trauma or whatever it is that's getting in their way is just making sure that it's very, very hard for them to make the right move and to do the right thing. But there's nothing they would rather do than just being, you know, the good teenager that just does everything right and doesn't get in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of times, you know, the teens and the parents ultimately have the same goal. And they don't realize that when they first come for therapy, but they do. They both ultimately want a closer, more easygoing relationship with each other. They want to feel more comfortable with each other. They want to do well in school. They want to be able to leave the house and go to college. You know, they really do have the same goals. It just doesn't maybe feel like that all the time. And maybe the way the teen goes about it doesn't seem like that to the parent. But remember, some of that also just developmentally at this age, them needing to become their own person. And so sometimes you're going to have those kids too that are like, fine, you don't like this, nothing I can do is perfect. So let me just push back even more. And sometimes I think, go ahead.
No, please, you go ahead.
I was going to say, see, the parents who are more sensitive get really hurt by some of those behaviors or expect reciprocity from the teen. What I mean by that is, like, I'm supposed to be there for them through all these breakups and friend struggles and helping them with homework, but they're not there for me. And really expecting that relationship to be equal. So that's a hard conversation, a hard truth I have to break to parents sometimes, is it's not an equal relationship. You know, they're the parent and their job is to support their teen and, you know, be physically and emotionally available, but that's not the teen's job for the parent. You know, that when they're having, their parents having a bad day, to be there to listen to them and give them a hug. So sometimes they get really hurt or offended by that, you know, they're not giving me a hug or something when I've had a bad day, or they're not being understanding. And sure, teens are going to do that sometimes, but that's not their job. And so I think sometimes parents get hurt or offended just when the teen isn't equally there for them or supporting them or asking about their day or understanding, you know, when they've had a bad day.
Absolutely. And sometimes if you have parents that are struggling in their relationship, right, in their marriage, then often the teens become some sort of support to them as well, right? They can mm-hmm. can get a little, you know, a little codependency, and those kind of things can start showing up, right? If you are already struggling on the marital front, mm-hmm. so but absolutely true that we often see how parents sometimes expect the teens to be there for them emotionally, and mm-hmm. teens often can't or are not, right? Mm-hmm. What about things like, I mean, I feel a lot of teens that come in, they are often struggling with shame. Right, mm-hmm. and the shame is sort of dragging them down, and the shame is preventing them from feeling heard and feeling loved and feeling seen. Mm-hmm. Do you feel the same way? Do you often talk to your teens about the shame that they might be building up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge. The blaming or shaming some of that, what I was saying a few minutes ago, with like the judgmental comments about their looks or their friends or who they're dating. But it comes from other people and places as well. and obviously makes them feel more anxious or more depressed, and they kind of go into this spiral, like nobody understands me, no one loves me, no one cares about me, and don't feel like they can tell their parent that or go to their parent for that. So we definitely talk about, you know, sometimes just what their parents can do or what might be preventing them from being there for them, and mm-hmm. how we can help the teen be assertive and advocate for themselves to tell their parent, like, look, this hurt my feelings, or, you know, I would really like it if you could just listen instead of tell me what I'm doing wrong, or not having this big reaction where it's like the blame and the consequence and getting angry, because a lot of times the teens feel like I can only be myself or share when I'm happy or kind of in a neutral mood and I'm just calm, but not when I'm angry or anxious or overwhelmed or stressed or any kind of negative emotion. My parent can't handle it. So, you know, we talk about that because we want them, again, ultimately to go to their parents or the adults in their life when they need help, because they are going to make mistakes. They're a teen. You know, if parents think about back to their teenage years, they made mistakes too. With technology now, maybe it's there's greater consequences. But, you know, they sexted someone and now that person's sharing pictures, or they're being bullied online, or they went to a party they weren't supposed to, but now they don't feel safe and they want to come home, or they are in an unsafe relationship and they want out of it. They're feeling suicidal. They drank or they're high and they need a ride home. But they're so worried about their parents' reaction and kind of the blaming or shaming or the consequence, the anger, that they're not reaching out to their parent in those times of need.
And, right.
Yeah.
So
that's
it's
really
a little bit like you have to help the parents manage their emotions, right, and understand when their emotions gets in their way for creating relationships or it has a negative impact on the relationship that they want with their teens. But you also probably are talking to the teens about how they should be okay with parents feeling their own discomfort. Like, I feel some teens are they have a hard time handling when parents are when parents are obviously either sad or anxious or scared, right? So they mm-hmm. so they avoid these situations. So I think our one of the parts of this process is really to help the teens understand that, hey, it's okay when mom is sad. She can hold her own. Mm-hmm. She's an adult. Mm-hmm. She'll figure it out. She has her mm-hmm. own support system, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not your job. Is not necessarily to keep mom away from being sad. But, Lillian, I know time is flying and we're almost going to go into a little break, but I would love to ask you, how would you say that you need to, like, what would be your sort of key points if you had to give parents some advice as to how they can improve this communication and the trust in the relationship?
Mm-hmm. So I think one major thing is being emotionally available. And I don't mean moment to moment, you have to always be there, you know, for the teen, but an overall state of availability. Like, if you come to me at any time, if you ever need help, I'm there for you. I can listen. Even if they're awkward or uncomfortable or they don't know what to say, I think a lot of times parents avoid that, those hard conversations if they're not sure what to say or how to deal with it, or it feels too overwhelming for them. But really conveying that message of you can always come to me even when you're in trouble. And then recognizing those attempts to connect when their teen yeah. is trying to show them a funny TikTok video or some art they drew, or telling them a story about a peer or something that happened at school, wants to play a song for them in the car. So all those kind of attempts to connect and have that conversation with their parents, recognizing those. And again, it's not, has to be every single time. None of us are perfect. Sometimes the parent has something going on or they're not feeling well, but, you know, recognizing that and asking for more information or asking what they like about that song or about their drawing or that TikTok video, even if it's something the parent's not interested in.
Yeah, or when it happens at times where you are, as a parent, maybe very tired or very anxious, you know, you're on your way out the door and need to get, or you just want the laundry done, right, so you can sit down for just 5 minutes and watch a bit of a movie before you fall asleep. Like, it sometimes comes as very awkward or very, I wouldn't say inappropriate, but at times where it's just really difficult to find that extra energy and just sit down and listen. But, wow, it makes a difference, right? It is so important that you stop what you're doing and just pay attention for those 10 or 15 minutes.
Or if you can't, it's okay to say that, and it's okay to set a boundary, like, it's really late, and I really need to go to bed, but you can still word it like word the no like a yes, you know, where it's, I'm really tired, I need to go to bed, but can you show me this video tomorrow after school, or can we talk, I love this artwork, and it looks like you really spent a lot of time on it, can we talk more about it tomorrow? So it can still be like, I can't right now, and setting that boundary, or, you know, you're not feeling well, or you need to go to bed, but still, like, recognizing that there's that attempt to connect.
Absolutely. Talking about it, right, is the first big step, instead of just being dismissive in the moment and not reacting to it. Unfortunately, we have to go into a little break again. We will be back in a few minutes. You're listening to KHTS 98.1 FM, and this is the Insight Teen Hour. And in the studio today, I got Melina Ali, who is an LCSW in our community. Welcome back to the Insight Teen Hour. My name is Frederick. I'm from Insight Treatment Programs here in Santa Clarita. And in the studio today, I got Melina Ali, who is here with me. And we are talking about, well, how to improve the communication with your teen, how to improve the trust in the family, how important we've been discussing, you know, how important it is as a parent to be mindful of some of the things you've been going through as a parent and some of your own history in your relationship with your teen. But here in the end, Melina, I wanted to hear if you had some more things to say about, you know, some of these things that are really important to improve the communication and the trust to your teen.
Yeah, I had a few more things that I like to talk about with parents, but one thing that can really break that trust is the probing, you know, trying to ask too many questions or snooping. I know parents get really worried and anxious, especially when their teen is depressed. So I've had parents get really panicked and they're like, well, what's wrong? Just tell me what's going on. You were crying. Like, please just tell me. They're just desperate to know what's going on. And this rarely gets them the answers that they want. Surprisingly, a lot of teens over the years have told me that they'll just tell their parents either old information, something that happened like a year ago, or they'll make something up because they're like, they're just not stopping. They just really want to know. And so I'm just telling them something else. Or the parent is snooping and like reading a journal or, you know, searching their bedroom or their car to find answers. And then in the end, maybe they find something out, but then they don't want to share how they found out that information. You know, they're trying to tell me like, I read their journal and they're having sex and can you please talk about this? But you can't tell them how you know. Like, this doesn't work. So you've just broken the teen's trust in that anxiety and panic to find out what's going on. And so I think a much better approach is just being able to accept the boundaries when your teen doesn't want to talk, but still asking and still checking in. Over time, one of the most hurtful things I think has been for my teens when their parents don't check in. Maybe they've shared that they're suicidal or depressed, or they've come out to their parents and they're gay or trans, they've gone through a breakup, something, you know, really hard has happened in their lives, and they share that, and then their parent doesn't check in. You know, they're not asking how they're doing. And sometimes the parent thinks, well, this will make them sad if I ask about this, how they're feeling, or this will make them feel uncomfortable. But really the teen wants to know that their parent is there for them and cares, even if the conversation feels awkward or, you know, the parent doesn't know what to say.
Yeah, even if they have to turn down the conversation, I would say, you know, just even that is better to open up and then be turned down. I don't want to talk about that, Mom. Leave me alone. It's still much, much better than not bringing it up. I often say I never have kids who says to me, you know, years after they've been struggling, says, you know what? I wish that my mom and dad wouldn't hold boundaries. Like, you know, I wish that my mom and dad would have stayed away and not, you know, not started sort of providing support for me or pushed me into treatment. Like, it's always the other story, right? You always hear, if there is any complaints like that, that the teens are saying, you know what, my mom didn't even see me. You know, I was wearing a hoodie and I was self-harming and she didn't even ask me to take off the hoodie. She didn't care, right? Or, so I think it's very, very important message to get out there that you never hear the teens, yes, in the moment for sure, complain about parents being too involved, but I think after the fact or later on in life, they always come back to, you know what, I actually wish they would have done something more. I wish they would have held their boundaries.
Because even if the parent's awkward or uncomfortable with it, it at least opens that door to communication and lets them know, like, I see you and I care and I'm here for you. Even if you want to say no or you don't want to talk about it right now, it's that answering that ultimate question of, like, do you love me? Are you there for me? And so that's the message that it sends by just checking in and asking how they're doing.
Yeah. And also on that note, you said, you know, the snooping and the, oh, I figured something out. All these small lies that's going to create in the family really has a negative impact, right? Everybody's walking around on eggshells because everybody has a little lie to hold on to. And it's really not helpful for the communication in the family and for the relationships and the trust that we want to create and build up, right? So stop snooping and just be honest with them and set boundaries and tell them that you need that password for the phone or whatever it is, and be straight up with it instead of trying to snoop around and trying to get the information through friends and people that, you know, let's just be real here. That creates the best relationship and the best trust in the family.
And to apologize when you do make a mistake, because you will as a parent, like we all do. So the apology and the repair when the mistakes happen.
Absolutely. Tell me, I know time is flying, and unfortunately the teen hour is done very soon, but here in the end, I just want everybody out there to know how to get hold of you, and, you know, what would be a good way for people to, if they have any questions or if they're interested in getting some a conversation with you about something that they're experiencing, how can they find you, Milena?
Yeah, probably my website is the best place. It's my name, www.melenaally.com. That's MalenaAlly.com. My practice is in Encino, and I work just with the adolescents and young adults. So that's the junior high, high school, college age, and kind of the transitioning adults with anxiety and depression, and groups for junior high and high school students.
Great. Do you take insurance or is it private pay?
It's private pay, and I provide a super bill at the end of the month, which I know a lot of people do. But, the information if they want to submit to their insurance company.
Perfect. And let me see, what else? Yes, I really think it's great that you're, when you're running groups, these eight-week groups, I think they can be very helpful for some of the teams to do that, maybe even while they're seeing you individually as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they can also participate in the groups and meet some other teens that are going through some of the same things. Because I feel all the teens, teenagers always feel that they're so, that their issues are so unique, right?
They feel so alone.
Right? They feel so alone and nobody understands them. And when they see other kids or hear other kids talk about their stories or talk about their challenges, they always go, oh, wow. I thought I was the only one who felt shameful about this or felt, you know. So I think it is
so
important.
It's the first brave one to speak up in group, and then it's that collective sigh, like, oh, yeah, me too. Like, I'm also dealing with that, or I've had something similar.
Exactly.
It's so validating.
Mm-hmm. It's so validating. I agree with you. And also the idea of sometimes I feel that teens have even a hard time putting words on it, right? Because they might have been shutting it down for a long time and disconnecting with their emotional world. So to give them an opportunity to hear other people express some of their emotions and go, okay, that's exactly what it was. Now I, you know, now I can relate to this. And I think that is it's very important that they learn that vocabulary, right? Very powerful, exactly.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, Melina, for coming in the studio today. I really appreciate it. Thanks for all your good advice. You're welcome. And you were listening to the Insight Teen Hour. And tune back in next Monday at 2 p.m. And we will have, I don't know which guest is going to be, but we will have a new guest in the studio and talk about issues related to teen mental health.